There are times in our life when we find a worthy cause that ignites a passion within us. We discover something that we can believe in, a powerful narrative that motivates us to ascend to the mountaintop to proclaim it because it is so compelling we cannot keep it to ourselves. And so we embrace this cause. We work tirelessly for its success. We are committed, 100% committed, to make it a reality, to incarnate the vision, to share the good news with everyone. Well, about 15 years ago, I discovered such a cause. We were celebrating the 175th anniversary of our town's incorporation, and the city asked me to plan the historical celebration. And I quickly discovered that Lexington was much older than 175 years. On the night of April the 18th, 1775, Captain John Parker went to bed early. He was sick. He was suffering with tuberculosis. But about the time he went to bed, the British General Thomas Gage led a large contingent of troops across the Charles River in Boston, and they started an overnight march to Concord. Now, this is not Concord. This is in Massachusetts. It's Concord, where the Patriots had stored a large supply of guns and ammunition. The road just happened to pass through the small Massachusetts hamlet of Lexington, where John Parker was sleeping. Now, you need to understand, the British had no intentions of bothering John Parker or anyone else in Lexington because there was nothing in that little town that interested them. But there was a major force that the British did not understand. For you see, for John Parker, and for the people of Lexington, and for the Patriots, there was something that was much more important than guns and ammunition. It was this dream, this hope, this notion, this conviction called freedom. About 2 o'clock in the morning, on April the 19th, the midnight rider Paul Revere galloped into Lexington, sounding the alarm of the British advance. Captain John Parker arose from his sickbed. He rallied his minutemen. Gathering at a local tavern, it is reported that he said, "Men, stand your ground. Don't fire unless fired upon. But if they mean to start a war, let it begin here." He gathered his men, divided them into two ranks on the Lexington Green. He did not realize that his soldiers would be outnumbered 10-1. The world's most dominant superpower, a well-oiled military machine, the British knew how to wage battle. It was impossible odds that these brave patriots were facing, but because of their dream and conviction of freedom, because it was so great, they did not back down. About 5 a.m., the stunned British Army marched into Lexington to see the Minutemen standing in front of them. They immediately ordered the Minutemen and John Parker to stand down. The Patriots refused. The mighty British opened fire. A few seconds later, 8 brave Patriots were dead. 9 more were wounded. And as the smoke cleared, the British continued their march to Concord. According to historical records, based on oral tradition, a few weeks later, a messenger, a rider on horseback, stopped at a store in North Carolina on a pleasant ridge between Abbott's and Swearing Creeks. That store would be located just a few blocks from where we are right now, probably about at the intersection of Main Street and Fifth Avenue. His mission was to share the news of what had happened up north, to tell about the brave patriots at Lexington and Concord. He told the story of their courage, their bravery. And I've always conjectured, he also asked, "By the way, where am I? What's the name of this place?" Well, this little settlement didn't have a name until then. According to local tradition, inspired by the heroic story of the Lexington Minutemen, the good people who lived here adopted the name that we carry to this very day, Lexington. When I was doing the research, it was a powerful moment when it dawned on me just how significant this was. Because to name this settlement Lexington in the year 1775, what year was the Declaration of Independence? This was a full year before the Declaration of Independence. And not only that, this part of North Carolina was teeming with Tories and British loyalists. You remember what happened to Benjamin Merrill a few years before? And so to claim the name of Lexington was a brave, courageous, and stunning declaration. Not only that, it makes our town, Lexington, the first of many other Lexingtons. Somebody said 48 states have a Lexington. But we were the very first to claim the name of the iconic Patriot Battle. We discovered this past year. Some of you were with us on our Bible study field trip to Lexington, Virginia. Our tour guide was taking us through that beautiful little town, and she told us with a great amount of pride and very little humility, "Our Lexington is the first to be named after the great battle." She said, "Now, Lexington, Kentucky, they claim to be older, but they're not. We are the first Lexington." And I said, "Well, that's interesting, because we're from Lexington, North Carolina, and we also were named for that great battle." "Oh," she said, rather smugly, "and what year was that?" 1775, I said. And her response was, "Oh, well, that's nice." Well, for the past 15 years, this has been my cause. This has been my passion. This has been my soapbox, my vision, to convince the leaders of our community what an amazing historical legacy we have, that we should be known for something other than just barbecue, that we have a historical legacy that should be shouted from the mountaintop. Lexington, North Carolina, the first Lexington named after the shot heard round the world. The first community who by their very declaration said, "We are patriots. We believe in freedom. We will stand our ground, and if they mean to start a war, we will fight." So for almost 15 years, I've tried. I have tried my best. The good Lord knows I've tried. Chad knows I've written newspaper articles. Tobin knows I've appealed my case to the mayor and to the city council. I speak every year to leadership Davidson County on their annual retreat, and I talk about this great distinction. A year or so ago, our state magazine had people from all over the state visiting Lexington, and I was able to share Lexington history, and I told this story. They were simply astounded. No one had ever heard that before. I have, as I said, I've talked to the mayor, the council, the Chamber of Commerce, Lexington Tourism. My hope was that these new wayfinding signs would have a new logo of Lexington, giving some sort of indication of who we are historically. but I just haven't gotten anywhere. Haven't been successful. No one else seems to share my passion. No one else seems to understand what I think would be such a beneficial thing for our community to promote this great legacy. And so you know what? There comes a time when nobody else is listening that you just need to let it go. You just need to say, okay, I've done my best, given it my best shot. Ray, let it go. Get off your soapbox. Nobody wants to listen to you anymore. It's an old broken record with you. Let it go. My granddaughters can sing Let It Go. Hannah and Ella Ray, they really can sing. If you haven't heard Let It Go, you need to hear it. Let it go. I could just hear Let It Go, Let It Go. Ray, let it go. As you can guess, there's going to be a little more to this in just a second. Eighth chapter of Mark's gospel. Elizabeth read this to us just a moment ago. Jesus had taken his disciples on a little retreat because they had found this worthy cause that ignited a passion within them. They had discovered something to believe in. It was a powerful narrative that motivated them to ascend to the mountaintop and proclaim it for everyone to hear. It was so compelling they could not be silent, and they were committed, 100% committed, to make it a reality, to incarnate the vision, to share the good news with everyone. But Jesus was telling them it is not going to be easy. There will be times, there will be many times when the majority of people around you will not want to hear the story. They will not share your passion. They will not share your conviction. People are going to stand in your way. You're going to find that it is never easy to follow me. There are going to be times when people are going to tell you, just let it go. Just let it go. Go on to something else. And Jesus is telling his disciples that the only thing they need to let go of is themselves. When he said, you must deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. Even if it cost you your life, which for the majority of disciples it would, what does it profit if you save your own life and you lose your very own soul? Never give up. Don't lose your passion, your conviction, your commitment. Don't let the lack of response from others silence you. You've had that passion, haven't you? I know you have. There was a time in your life when your commitment to Christ was the passion that ignited this great cause within you. You believed with all of your heart that Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of the living God. You would climb to the highest mountain to proclaim it. It was so compelling, you could not keep it to yourself. You embraced the gospel. You worked tirelessly to be a faithful disciple. There was a spark. There was a glow. There was a fire within you. And you were convinced there was no one who would ever put it out. Well, what happened? What caused you to let it go? To weaken your faith? To lose that passion. Of course, you learn very quickly that the majority of other people don't share these priorities with us. And then somebody said something that hurt you. Something happened in the church that devastated you. Somehow you had it in your mind that the Christians in the church were supposed to act like Christians. I'll never forget, as a very young pastor, full of passion, enthusiasm, and idealism, I had some church members who were just downright ugly to me. I had an entire family, one Saturday morning, sitting in my office with letters of resignation. They represented almost 10% of my congregation. This was extended family. They had gotten really mad. And it was a big misunderstanding, but I wasn't too worried about it because the chairman of the deacons was also there. And I know that he would tell them the whole story. And once they understood the whole story, we would realize that we all made mistakes, but we would forgive and move on until the chairman of the deacons lied. I mean, just lied to them. And I was devastated. He saved his own skin, threw me under the bus. And I really thought, if this is what church work is going to be, I don't want to have any part of it. Here I was, I thought I was so heroic. I decided to follow Jesus, to go to seminary and all that stuff. But I wasn't prepared for that. You ever had something happen to you in the church that just devastated you? I didn't let it go. I didn't throw in the towel. It seemed like I heard a voice saying, I called you to follow me, to be faithful to me. And there are going to be many times in your ministry when you are hurt and disillusioned. There are going to be many times when you feel like you're the only one who cares. You're the only one willing to work. You're the only one who has the passion and the commitment. But all that matters is that you be faithful to me. And when you are tempted to give it up, when you're tempted to throw in the towel, when you are tempted to let it go, remember to take up your cross and follow me, because I took up my cross and died for you. And I didn't let it go. You know, our church needs a few friends right now. We need some people with that passion again. We need people to get to the top of the mountain and proclaim the good news. I told you a couple of weeks ago that we're hurting financially. We have leadership positions that have not been filled. And not only that, there's a bigger picture. There are a lot of people today who are questioning the viability and the future of the traditional church. In fact, there are many people who are leaving the traditional church. A lot of people just are giving up on church. And a lot of people are going to churches that have more bells and whistles and are much more entertaining. So what do we do? What do we do about our church? Do we just go into mourning? Do we kind of sit around and remember the good old days, long gone? Do we let it go? Do we throw in the towel? Do we say, well, you know, our church has outlived its usefulness. I have more important things to do. Or do we, on this Reformation Sunday, do we reclaim that passion that once filled us, so that we once again will climb to the top of the mountain, even if we are the only one, even if we feel like the voice crying in the wilderness? We will be dedicated. We will be committed. We will give our all. Jesus Christ is Lord of my life. We will hold on, because young people, children, God has the power to provide. Hold on. Let me tell you, that's good, Jasmine. That's what we need to do. We need to hold on. Now, I was about ready to let it go. I'm back on the Lexington thing. I want to tell you what happened. You're not going to believe this. I was really going to give it up, wasn't going to say anything else about it, until about 3 weeks ago. And one day on the radio, I heard a report that archaeologists had made this amazing discovery in Lexington, Massachusetts, that validated without a doubt the Battle of Parker's Revenge. And I went, wait, hold on just a minute. I didn't even know there was a Parker's Revenge. I didn't do enough research. And so I went back and looked it up, and I discovered that after the battle, now, you know, John Parker was sick. In fact, the man died a few weeks later. And 8 people had been killed. I just figured they went home, went to bed, and said, well, we gave it our best shot. But that's not what happened at all. You know, the British, when they left Lexington, they went to Concord. That's where they had the famous battle by the bridge, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. But then they left Concord, and they were on their way back. They had to get back to Boston, and the road went through Lexington. Well, guess what happened on the way back? Captain John Parker and his brave Minutemen refused to go home and go to bed. They attacked them with such ferocity that the British didn't know what hit them. And they let them know that they were still committed to freedom, and they were never going to give up. They were not going to let down. They were not going to let it go. What archaeologists discovered, they thought this was kind of like a big battle that took place, or maybe they were shooting at them like guerrilla fighters. They discovered, they were looking over 35 acres in an area smaller than a football field is where it took place. They found 10 musket balls. They found a button from a uniform. They found indisputable evidence that it not only was a battle, but it was a courageous, sometime hand-to-hand fighting. And it only increases the heroism and the valor of those men. And when I heard that, I said, if John Parker didn't let it go, neither will Ray Howell. You hadn't heard the last from me about Lexington. I'm on another campaign. But there's something much more important than that, and that is our church. Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me. He took up his cross and he died for us. We can never let our church go. We can never lose our commitment. We can never lose our passion and our resolve. We must be committed. We must work together, even if we're the voice crying in the wilderness. So what about you? Will you join me? Will you join me in a recommitment to our church, a recommitment to Jesus Christ, to find that passion, to find that spark, to find that glow that somehow has been missing, so that working together we can take our church and our church can grow, we can come up out of the ashes, we can be financially sound once again, we will have leadership in the right places so that we can be the presence of Christ in this community to the glory of God. We cannot ever let it go. We must hold on to the cross of Jesus Christ. Come all Christians, be committed to the service of the Lord.